Hit a home run and get pre-approved for your next refinance or home purchase at thehomeloanexpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
And a chance here on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com to talk it over with the Rams legend, Isaac Bruce, a future Hall of Famer, and we won't be saying that much longer. Isaac joining us now, and tell me the anticipation. I know this is the fourth time as a finalist for the Hall of Fame. Does this one feel different?
It feels about the same, Martin. First, thanks for having me on the show, man. And I think you should be practicing, you know, Hall of Famer without the future in front of it. You know, just get in your mirror and start doing what I do. But it doesn't feel much different. I think, you know, the atmosphere, I think that's the biggest difference that, you know, that we'll experience, you know, with it being, with the Super Bowl being here in South Florida. And my friends and family, for the most part, are here in South Florida. So, it's great anticipation. It's excitement. And the expectation level is very high.
Remind everybody the process. You're there at the Super Bowl, so it's super exciting. You were in Atlanta last year, Minneapolis 2 years ago, Houston 3 years ago. I don't need to remind you. But you're in a hotel room, and they basically say, well, if we knock on the door, you're in. If we don't, go get some pizza. I mean, it's kind of brutal, isn't it?
Well, that's what they tell you at the luncheon. I mean, once, you know, you have your introduction luncheon, they kind of let you know the process of, you know, how you're going to be selected, or how your body of work is going to be scrutinized, and how you're going to be selected. And then, you know, they kind of tell you if you get a call, that means you didn't make it this year, but hopefully you'll be back as a finalist the next year. Now, if you get the knock on the door, you know, the president of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, David Baker, you know, it'll be his knock. He'll be backed up by a camera crew, and you get congratulated. You get a chance to, you know, offer praises, cry, and hug family. So that's the process.
So over the last few years, you've never had housekeeping knock at the door, like, and you thought, oh, my God, I'm getting in. No false alarms.
Last year was Atlanta. I think last year my room was not far from Robert Brazil, who got inducted last year. So, you know, around that time, around the knockage or the callage time, you know, your ears become sensitive to certain stuff, and I'm looking for a knock. So I hear a knock on the door. I mean, I hear the knock so blatantly that I actually start walking towards the door, and I hear people talking in the hallway. So when I hear the voices of, you know, Mr. Baker and other people, and they're not talking to me, I kind of knew what was going on, happening somewhere else, and it wasn't my door. So, you know, false start.
You know, it is a process. It happens to a lot of players. I think Harry Carson famously said, the Giants' great linebacker, said, stop calling me, because he would be a finalist every year and he wouldn't get in. And he said, just take my name off the damn list. And then I think he got in the next year. You're a better man than I. How do you avoid, maybe bitterness is too strong, but even frustration with the process, because your numbers are, they didn't change from last year or the year before. I mean, you still got 1,024 receptions, 15,000-plus yards, 91 touchdowns. I mean, none of that has changed. How do you avoid some level of frustration?
Well, you know what? Just like, you know, the president of the Pro Football Hall of Fame knocks on your door, I mean, I am human, and frustration knocks on my door as well. I think, you know, I'm at a point in my life where I can deal with frustration. I can either accept, open the door to frustration, or – you know, I can just keep the door closed. Many times I just choose to keep the door closed, Martin. And, you know, I think about, you know, the great things that are happening and transpiring in my life at that moment. Number one, you know, being a son of the Most High. Number two, my family. My wife and I, we have a great marriage. My children, my friends and family, the career that I had playing football, and things like that. So that puts me in a position to be grateful. And not only that, just being a finalist again. I mean, you know, when you think about the numbers, and, you know, Mr. Baker, he mentions these numbers pretty much every year I've been there, about 30, between 25 and 30,000 people have actually played football, and how you dwindle the numbers down from all the way down from that to the 300 plus that are already in the Pro Football Hall of Fame to this next group of 15 that are actually sitting in the same room as you. I mean, it's humbling. I mean, you just think about those numbers and see where you are. It's the very cream of the crop. So I'm grateful for each time I've been a finalist, each time my body of work has gone before the committee and been scrutinized. I mean, I'm grateful for it.
You mentioned being around family there in South Florida. You're the 13th of 15 children. I don't know if you and I, we've talked a lot over the years, ever talked about Isaac Bruce, the kid. And you're a skinny guy. I'm wondering, was there not enough food for you being the 13th to 15th? What was life like growing up in South Florida?
It was great, man. I mean, my parents had my siblings and I in sets. And I always like to say groups of five. So she had the first five, the second five, then that last five, which is my five. I have eight sisters and six brothers. And I tell people when you have eight sisters, that means you have nine mothers. So, they're at a place, they're at a maturity level where most of them can be my actual mom. And the same goes with my brothers. They're at a maturity level where, at an early age in my life, they could have been my parents. So it was fun. It was different. I didn't lack for friends. At times, I didn't lack for enemies. They were all right there in the household at times. But, there was a genuineness how my parents made sure that we were all connected together, not only from our looks, not only from our personalities, but from the very essence of just loving each other and supporting everyone. So, and it's still very evident to this day, man. So it's great to have been born into the family that I was born into, into this great city, South Florida, here in Fort Lauderdale, where I was raised.
Now tell me, you don't have to send Christmas cards and Easter for every, do you have to do every family? Then you get nieces, you get nephews and cousins, and have you had to keep up with, if you would put Hallmark, well, actually, you'd keep them in business.
Well, you know what? Thank God we don't celebrate those two holidays that you mentioned. just the birthdays and, what's funny now, we have these nieces and nephews. They're having birthday parties, and we've got to get, people ready to go and celebrate those. But it's always fun to see each other again and just seeing the maturation of everyone, the way we are growing in life and how we're still here for each other. And I mean, when you have a family like mine, you don't lack for anything. I mean, anything that you need or you may think that you need, there's a person or a person in that group, in that circle that we have that can fulfill that need.
You know, what's interesting is you're a really smart guy. I know that. And you care about education. You come back to St. Louis, your foundation work is really the high school kids and making sure they're on track. And then I see coming out of high school, you were going to go to Purdue. You didn't have the SAT score. And I said, this is one of the smartest guys I've been around in the league. And I'm just wondering, was it something where you didn't make it a priority as a younger guy?
Not at all. I mean, that's exactly it, Martin. I mean, I thought, football was just it. Just go out, play football, do your thing, have fun, and just live life from there. But, I didn't – it wasn't a point where – I couldn't do the work. It's about being diligent versus being lazy. So I chose to be lazy in some areas. In other areas, I could be a tad bit more diligent. So I did that with football, didn't do that with academics, and it cost me. And I always like to say, that's what cost me an opportunity to play in the Big Ten, where football is big. Academics is very big and made me go a different route. And from what we do in the foundation now, we made education a priority. We like rewarding students for their education prowess and those who are making strides in education. We like to be there on the forefront and make sure they have an opportunity to be rewarded for what they do in the classroom. as well as on their field of sports.
I hope you know about the Schnucks Rewards app. If for some reason you don't, where have you been? The whole city has been downloading this. If you're a Schnucks Rewards member, you're going to earn points. And the next time you're at Schnucks, you can use those points for money off. Digital coupons on the items you want most. Download the Schnucks Rewards app. Get the app that gets you.
Party all season long at Hot Shot Sports Bar and Grill at one of their 11 area locations. Great food and drink specials available during every Blues game. It is your home for Blues hockey. Remember, if the Blues score 5 any game this season, you get Hot Shots legendary tacos for $1 each the next day. Find a Hot Shots near you at hotshotsnet.com. Proud partner of the St. Louis Blues.
Hair Saloon for Men. You'll receive the perfect haircut, complimentary beverage, relaxing shampoo, hot towel and a mint, complimentary shoe shine, all for just $22. Hair Saloon for Men.
So you end up at West LA College, later Santa Monica College, ultimately at Memphis, but were you humbled at that point? Was it heartbreaking? Because you're thinking Big Ten, you're going to go to Purdue. I mean, how did you handle that?
Well, you know what? I had to grow up quick. I mean, I think the journey that I took going the junior college route, it made me a man immediately. I'm talking about from a standpoint where I had to come up with travel money just to get to Los Angeles. And from there, the funds to pay for school, to pay for housing, to feed myself, make sure I had transportation to and from school, which was public transportation, and to come up with a structure for myself to make sure that I didn't you know, blow this opportunity, this next opportunity that I had. All the way through transferring from West LA to Santa Monica City College for, you know, football purposes. And at the very end, you know, you had to test out. And once you test out, after you got a scholarship, you know, you had to make sure that you got that AA degree before you can enter Memphis. And those things were big boy stuff, what I like to call them. And, you know, I just kept knocking them down by the grace of God and ended up at Memphis, having a two-year career there. And it worked out.
And then you end up out of Memphis. You're a second-round pick to the L.A. Rams. Excuse me, emotional here talking to Isaac. Choked up. You end up being a second-round pick. You go to the Rams. What did you think your career would be then? I mean, second round's pretty high. You must have had high hopes. What did you think was realistic?
Realistically, I believe that I was going to be the 17th pick going to Pittsburgh, playing for the Steelers. I just felt like I was the best receiver in the draft. I just felt like that other guys who were coming out with me that season, they had just a little bit more what I thought was important. You know, they played on TV every Saturday, where I didn't play on television every Saturday. These guys did. And I also thought these guys were coming from what I call football factories, these cookie-cutter factories where they just produce players every year, and they go first round, second round, third round type guys. Where I went to Memphis, which was predominantly a basketball school, you know, I had to cut my teeth, I had to scratch. I had to really, really play at a high level when I played against higher competition in the SEC, you know, just to get noticed, I thought. So I felt like that, you know, as far as a football player, that I was better. But as far as a wide receiver, I was two times better than everyone else that was coming out.
And, you know, St. Louis has been on both ends of it. They get a team from L.A., then they lose a team to L.A. You, interestingly enough, your first year, 94, ends up being the last year there. They're playing in Anaheim. You're excited because you're in the league, but I would think that had to be a really weird first year because there weren't a lot of fans, and then ultimately you make the move. What was that period like?
It was a little weird, but I'll tell you what, I was happy because, you know, I had done – two prior years in Los Angeles going to junior college where I was, you know, I was just really scrapped for money and resources at that time. And then to get drafted back in L.A., you know, with an NFL contract, I mean, that changed a whole lot, changed my perspective immediately. And, you know, it was always sunny. It was 70 degrees. The grass was always green. We were playing on grass. We didn't have the best team, so it wasn't good for my football career. But just being there at that time, I can see that, you know, what was forged between the Rams and Southern California at that time was just diminishing at a rapid pace. And, you know, just hearing the rumors of leaving and moving, I got to say, be honest, I wasn't very happy about it.
And then you end up in St. Louis, and the struggles continue for the franchise for a number of years. The big breakout is 99. It's interesting. You had a big gala. IsaacBruce.org is where people can find out more about the foundation, the work you continue to do. A lot of fun with the 20th reunion that we did in the fall. But I think it surprises some people how you and – would surprise folks how close you and Coach Vermeil have been, because there was a stress in the relationship, right? And he got mad because you had a hamstring injury. He called you a so-called superstar. When did you – because you got – I know how you are. You're competitive. That's going to tick you off. When did that relationship heal, and how close are you now?
Well, I tell you what, man. You know, fortunately for me, I mean – you know, God has always had a way of preparing me for stuff and for things and next phases of my life. I think right before I met Coach Vermeil, before he took over as head coach, you know, I had started practicing the meditation at that time and really writing out and building up my identity at that time. So by the time I met Coach Vermeil, I didn't know much about him. I heard about him in Philadelphia. When I was getting to know him first couple of years, I saw how he brought in a lot of his former players to speak to us. And from that, I saw the loyalty that was in Coach Vermeil. I saw it, you know, from that standpoint. I saw him take guys under his wing that probably were underachievers and push them to be better players. I saw those two very unique qualities that Coach Vermeil possessed. And I just thought that we hit a bump initially in our relationship, and I knew that, you know, whatever transpired from that standpoint, I knew I had the grace to be promoted in it. So, you know, I was at a point where I could be water when the fire is at its hottest, and I think that did something with Coach Vermeil, because, you know, it was never my objective or my place to really talk down on a person or a guy that's really leading me to where I wanted to go at that time. So I could withstand that, and hopefully that I was in a point where I was trying to allow my play to win him over. I think that's what started to happen with our relationship. But as of today, man, I mean, he's one of the most loyal guys that I've ever come across. He'll call you out of the blue. He calls me out of the blue quite often. He calls me when, you know, something, some kind of award or when you're being recognized or honored. Coach Vermeil is there. He was at my wedding. You know, whatever he can do for my foundation, he does it. He's always want to donate some of his wine. And he's a loyal guy, sometimes to a fault, but that fault always benefits his players.
Can you imagine the social media when a coach calls a star player the so-called super? Can you imagine what that would have been like in this era? You would have been the top story with Stephen A. on First Take. They would have been going bananas. Again, social media related, can you imagine Mike Martz in this era where every quote gets retweeted? And I think it would have been fantasy land for those of us in the media, but I wanted to get into Coach Martz because you guys are extremely close, and people don't realize that dates back. Before he was your OC, before he was your head coach, he was your receivers coach. Did you guys bond early?
Yeah, but I'll say this. He was very knowledgeable about every position on offense. He can coach every position. That's very unique. And he was a technician. I think he was very, very good for me from a standpoint of he could see the talent that I had, and he could call it up out of me. He taught me how to watch film. He taught me who to emulate as far as playing the position. There were a couple of times where he would have to jump probably my technique from a standpoint of playing football, and that helped me tremendously. I mean, I think he noticed that I was a coachable player, which benefited the room as a whole, and I think he really, really tutored and pushed me to a point where I could be great and play the position at a very high level. And he really started opening my eyes from a wide receiver standpoint. And then when he became the offensive coordinator, he opened my eyes from a quarterback standpoint. And that really helped my game tremendously.
And do you think he was one of the best at us against them? Every coach uses that. But it seemed like by the end of the week, you guys were in a full lather. It might be us against the media. He may have been mad at all of us, but there was always something to kind of rile up the room. Wasn't that sort of the game week strategy he had?
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely a kindling. I mean, he'd be that fire starter and keep the and he turned into the log and kept the fire going. So he was great at that. And you know, when he gave his when we would implement a game plan for the week, you know, I always loved the way he kept the focus on our offense. He kept the focus on our team, and we could be playing against Julius Peppers, you know, a great defensive pass rusher, Brian Urlacher, a great linebacker. We rarely mentioned those guys in our meetings, unless they were just this special player that we had to give a little attention to. And he always kept that focus on us. He always had us thinking scoring 40 points or more. And I loved him for that. I mean, he was the same guy in that behind closed doors as he showed to you guys as far as the media is concerned.
So when you get that gold jacket, we're going to be talking about a number of St. Louis Rams. Now, Marshall Faulk is in, Kurt Warner is in, Orlando Pace, Aeneas Williams. Do you look back and think, man, I know Super Bowls are hard to come by. Do you think, man, we were so close to winning a couple, and maybe then the legacy even for us, dynasty gets thrown around too much. But is there any – I don't know if regret's the right word, but how much do you think about that?
Well, I think about it a lot. I just thought about it 2 days ago. I think Tory brought it up. He was speaking about it. And when you actually, you know, it's one thing to look at a team on paper. It's another thing to see how we practice and prepare. And then there's another thing when we went out and actually executed game plans on Sunday and played against our opponent. So, you know, the guys that came out of that group, that era, that are actually enshrined in Canton forever, man. You got to think that way. You got to think that, you know, there was something that was missing. There was probably wins that we left on the table. And you think about it. I mean, as a wide receiver, you know, you mentioned 1,000 catches. You mentioned however many yards and touchdowns. I actually visualized catches where I thought, you know, I could have ran this route better. I could have done this and completed this pass, and I probably would have been off to the races. So, and I have two of those that are very vivid. They come back quite often to me. Those are the things that you think about as a retired player.
Because of the Patriots' great run in recent years, winning multiple Super Bowls, does that take the sting away from what happened in Super Bowl 36? And looking back at that week in New Orleans, was there ever any indication that, you know, maybe we're overlooking them, or, you know, boy, maybe we won't win this game? Because I think everybody said, boy, the Rams are going to not only win, they're going to dominate. When you reflect back on that, what about that week in New Orleans? And because Brady and Belichick have become a real big deal, does that change it?
Well, you know, Martin, I think you got to go back a little further than that, man, because, you know, we played them in Foxborough, you know, prior to the Super Bowl that season. And we ended up winning that game. It was a tough fought game. And when we got in the locker room, you know, you thought there would have been a lot of excitement because we knew they were an up and coming team, and we were pretty much following and seeing what they were doing. And Coach Mark, he kind of steals the room, and he says, you know what, man, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see this team in the Super Bowl. So that was different because, like I said earlier, you know, Coach Martz really made us always look in the mirror and capture and keep our identity. We never really put the focus on another player or a team. And but you know, as it would have, as fate would have it, you know, we ended up seeing them in the Super Bowl again, and I felt like, you know, that first game was close. I felt really confident going into that Super Bowl matchup. You know, because I felt like we had played really, really well versus the Philadelphia Eagles in that NFC Championship game. And we were hitting on all cylinders. And, you know, I thought we had a great week of practice. But I never, you know, we're playing in a dome. We're used to playing in a dome, playing on our turf. And I just never expected, you know, the game to be that close. Honestly, I just never did. Not that we took the Patriots lightly. I just didn't expect it to be that close. I thought the defense would come out and play great the same way they played in Foxborough, and we would be the normal greatest show on turf. So, unfortunately, it didn't happen, man. I mean, and fortunately, that's a game that, you know, I pretty much wiped out of my thinking.
Well, and you know, as your Super Bowl hero growing up, or excuse me, your football hero growing up, Dan Marino doesn't have a Super Bowl ring. So you did get one, and for a lot of guys, that's the Holy Grail, just to get one. The 99 season, yeah. So magical. And it's you who really had the game that I think cemented that the Rams were for real. It was the 49er game early in the season. You get to 4-0, and I think everybody said, well, this Kurt Warner, this is a nice little story, and the Rams got a few weapons here and there. Did you feel that was the game when you said, okay, we got something special?
Well, Martin, that was the game I was waiting on. We had gone through spring. We did training camp, first four games of the season. I was waiting for the true measuring stick, and that measuring stick for me was only in Northern California. I mean, when those guys came to town, and, you know, I'd seen those guys come to town on many occasions. We've gone out there in San Francisco on many occasions, and it wasn't ever close. It wasn't close at all. And, you know, they were just superior. They were superior in their thinking and the way they executed their game plans. And in 1999, I was waiting to have that measuring stick. And by the end of the first half, I think I was pretty much convinced that, you know, we had something that was as sharp as a knife on both edges, and that it would cut you if you weren't careful with it. So I think at that point, I was pretty much convinced that we were ready to make noise in the NFC West.
It's all aboard the newest restaurant in St. Louis, the Train Shed at Union Station. Perfect place before and after Blues and Cardinal games. Historic St. Louis Union Station is downtown's newest dining destination, with Train Shed's creative pub and the Soda Fountain's modern diner. The Train Shed at Union Station.
And you mentioned noise. The first playoff game, the Vikings game, at home, the Dome's rocking. I know the building becomes an issue later. It's the reason that they move, and it's outdated. It's not the Taj Mahal that they have. But on that particular day, I think it might have even been a Saturday, I forget, but that building was, and Dick Vermeil has said it, I've never experienced anything like it, because, you know, for the franchise and for the city, it's like, wow, this is real. We not only had a great year, we're in the stinking playoffs, we're hosting the Vikings, and early on, you catch it. I don't know what the route was. You're going over the middle, and you're gone. And I just think there were so many special moments along the way. But that had to be pretty cool for a Rams franchise. And you'd only been in the league a handful of years, but had really been kind of a laughingstock. And here you guys were on the big stage, and that building was crazy.
Yeah, that was, you know, I've been in a couple of loud stadiums, Kansas City being one of them. Been in the Superdome with the Saints, with them, you know, pumping that artificial noise into the stadium. And, you know, with that prior, that 98 season, even Atlanta that year, man, they were pretty loud. You know, coming off their run, and you know that kickoff before. Oh my goodness, man! That kickoff in Minnesota, man, it was like that. You thought the roof was gonna just come up at times, and the entire city was behind the St. Louis Rams, and that's who the Minnesota Vikings played that day. They played the city of St. Louis in that game, and fortunately, we were able to put on a show and move on to the next round after that.
And you win on the Ricky Prohl catch, which, interestingly enough, you've always said your favorite catch of your career is the one that Ricky had. Didn't have a touchdown the whole season. Part of the magic of 99. But then you're in a real slugfest with the Titans, and the call comes in, and you – and this is the other thing about Hall of Fame candidacy. A lot of times they say, well, a guy didn't play in the Super Bowl. He didn't win the Super Bowl. Well, you've got that, and you have a signature moment in that game, Super Bowl 34. Take us through that play, because, again, that's Mike Martz, the coordinator, basically saying, let's go for it. Take us through that whole play.
Yeah, you know, we started off 16-0, and, you know, we were still playing football. The Titans were still playing football. That was their M.O. And the game, you know, you blink your eyes twice, the game is 16-16. And now, and right after that, we have two drives that stall out, you know, 2 3-and-outs. And, you know, they have all the momentum. And momentum is tremendously huge in football games, any sport. And, you know, you want to ride it sometimes. So it's funny because, you know, when I think back on it, you know, I'm thinking Coach Martz, you know, this is my first time playing for him as the offensive coordinator. And I kind of got a feel of who I thought he was as a coordinator at that time. So, you know, we're close to the 2-minute warning. We get another opportunity here in the fourth quarter. Scores tied 16-16. I'm thinking maybe, you know, just throw something or let Marshall run it. We go to 2 minutes and see what we can do. Probably go 2-minute offense, put a little pressure on their defense, and see what happens. But, you know, from the way I hear he told that story is that he just wanted to take a shot, see what happened. So he calls the play. Twins right, H right, 999, H balloon, which is normally we've ran all year, run everybody off and dump the ball down to Marshall, let him get what he can get. Maybe he breaks it because we're all blocking downfield. See what happens. Maybe set Wilkie up, kick a field goal, play great defense, end of the game. But as it turns out, when I heard the play, bam, I automatically knew, okay, this is it right here. This is my childhood dream of catching Super Bowl championship, winning games, winning catches, you know, in the backyard back in Fort Lauderdale. It was always Dan Marino throwing me the ball. This is my moment right here. So, and it just happened that way, Martin. I see the ball coming up. I get the ball in my hand, and I turn into this kid again, man. I turn into this young boy back in Fort Lauderdale when I catch the ball. He's at the 10. He's at the 20. He scores. And that's exactly the way it happened for me, man. Everything goes slow motion, and from slow motion, it speeds back up. See yourself walking down the sideline with the team owner. Georges Frontier, friends and family celebrating in the stands, teammates celebrating on the sideline, and I'm kind of like numb until it's Steve McNair's turn, and then I wake up.
Did you see yourself on the Jumbotron? I'm thinking you looked up while you were running, right? That you could see yourself going into the end zone?
You know, I had to pick up that habit. You know, I call it a bad habit because you don't know where guys are coming from on the field. But a couple of games earlier, I started doing that for some reason. And even in the Super Bowl, I see myself on the Jumbotron, and, you know, it's scattered, but, you know, just being a human, you find yourself first and then see everybody else. So I kind of see me. I see me running down the field, guys flying behind me on the ground, standing up. And then, you know, from the Jumbotron, my eyes go down into the stands, and you see the colors. You see the Ram team colors. You see the Titan team's colors. One guy celebrating, other guys doing Surrender Cobra, and that was it. Touchdown.
And the only regret.
I really thought that was the end of the game, Mark. I thought it was all zeros on the clock. It's over.
And then Mike Jones steals your thunder, makes the tackle. In fact, there's all these votes for greatest Super Bowl moments, greatest NFL moments, and the tackle's on there. And somebody tweets at me the other day, what about the Bruce catch? I'm like, oh, that's right. That should have been. Sealing the deal. Now, the only bummer here is you missed the parade, which was one of the epic. I did, too, because I didn't have a flight out of there. But it shouldn't have been the next day. In hindsight, it was too quick. It all happened too fast. But here's what we'll do. When you get into Canton, I will organize it. I always have a lot of ideas. I don't follow through on many, so I have to warn you. But I think we should have an Isaac parade in St. Louis to celebrate since you missed the parade 20 years ago.
You know what? I'm going to throw this name at you because this lady here is so dynamic. She can probably get it done. And I think, you know, everybody that's involved in St. Louis, all the higher-ups, they'll agree to it because they're Debbie Champion. She's an attorney there in St. Louis. Debbie Champion. She'll put it together and make sure it happens, man. I think it'll be sweet, man. You know, I did miss that parade, and, you know, I want my opportunity of going down Market Street, you know, celebrating something.
Look at this. Whether there's two of us or 2,000 of us, we've stumbled into a fun idea. It'll be Isaac in the gold jacket, a Hall of Famer for years in our eyes. And again, so much fun in the visits that we've had where he comes back. The bond in St. Louis is incredibly strong. And I will say this, I'm sure you've thought about your speech or worked on it. That's such a big emphasis when you get to Canton. I think in recent years, players that played in St. Louis and are Rams alums, I think they're a little paranoid to say too much about St. Louis because they don't want to upset Kroenke and there's all this animosity. I get the sense Isaac Bruce will have plenty of St. Louis shout-outs in there.
Yeah, Isaac Bruce is not paranoid. No. Won't happen.
My man, happen. Great to talk to you. Best of luck, and we'll see you in Canton.
Appreciate it, Martin.